After holding the Bengals to just 6 points during the Browns' first matchup, defensive coordinator Ray Horton looks to carry that momentum into this week.
You know, obviously, our defense played a very good game against Cincinnati the first game. And, you know, we, our staff, I believe our players, think that Cincinnati has one of the deepest, most talented teams, if not in our division, definitely in the AFC. They have multiple skilled people at multiple positions, running back, depth, tight end, wide receiver. You know, they're loaded, and it's going to be a huge challenge for us to, you know, think that we're going to do that. That's a huge feat to think you're going to hold this team without a touchdown.
What do you see when you look at Andy Dalton? He, you know, was player of the month in October, mm-hmm. and then the last two games hasn't had the same numbers. What do you see out of his season?
That really is the NFL. You know, it really is. What have you done for me lately? It's game to game, and, you know, you can have a good game 1 week and turn around and have a bad game the next. And that's just life in the NFL, and, you know, it's different people playing you. It's on the road. There's a lot of factors that go in. Are you playing a 3-4 or 4-3, a pressure team, a Tampa 2 team? And, again, like I said, the weather in Baltimore. And I think that's just normal NFL football. And, you know, our job is hopefully to continue that, but I'm sure he's working, they are, down there to figure out what the abnormalities were for him and make sure that, you know, you can remove those variables to allow him to play like he did against the Jets.
Since the last time you saw the Bengals, Giovanni Bernard has really come on as a talented running back, a dual threat guy. Just what have you seen on film from him?
Everything that I said the first time we sat down, I thought that kid was going to be special, and he is. He's talented. Somebody said that the run that he had against the Miami Dolphins was the run of the year so far in the NFL, and I can see that. You know, he's a guy that we have to be patient with. Where he starts at isn't necessarily an indicator where he's going to end up at. Great balance, speed, vision. He can catch. We thought he was going to be a talented player, and he's so far he's been that.
Another crack at A.J. Green. And can you talk about just A.J., just 100-yard game after 100-yard
sure.
game and that matchup?
Well, as long as they are both in the state of Ohio, it's going to be that for a long time, and they're both young players. You know, myself coming in, not really having played A.J. before, not seen him that much, I was impressed when I did an in-depth study, and he's done nothing to disappoint. He is a fantastic young man. He's in the mold of a professional, meaning you don't see the hyperbole with him. He just goes out and does his job and gets back in the huddle. He doesn't want the extra attention from off the field. He wants to be known as a, you know, I think a stand-up professional guy that's been there before, player. And the matchup between him and Joe is going to be a battle. Two good players on two good teams. Going at it for a long time, and they both have the skills to compete and not only compete in the league but compete with each other. And, you know, you enjoy – I'm sure they both would tell you, I enjoy that kind of challenge. I know Joe does.
For Joe in that first matchup, I mean, AJ didn't have any, you know, huge catches, and I think he contained them pretty well.
Yeah, Joe's been that way all year for us. I think I keep saying our secondary has played well, and part of that is we always buy into it's 11-man – concept and proposition that the pressure up front helps, so you don't have to cover long. And at times, you know, they're going to get the ball out, and you got to get the ball down. And AJ's going to get his catches. You know, they're going to get their throws, but really, what it comes down to is limiting them to no explosive plays. And AJ has the longest play in the AFC right now, and he's the most yards in the NFL right now. And he's just coming off a huge, you know, last catch. You know, it wasn't his last catch, but the last catch of regulation. So we're going to be challenged on all fronts. They've got a good line. They've got fantastic skill people.
Something about Joe from that performance?
No, I think what I've learned about Joe is I remember when he was at Gainesville coming out, I was at his workout, talented young guy. I met with him for probably an hour before his workout in Gainesville, and he's everything that I thought he would be. And he's stepped up to the challenge of matching the other team's number one receiver. And he was that way really coming out of school. I didn't coach him, obviously, early, but I'm happy that he is everything that I thought he was coming out of Florida.
Can you talk about the development of Armonte Bryant? He hasn't, you've got usually like 75 or whatever amount of snaps, but when he gets in there, he's very noticeable. He's had a couple sacks. What's allowed him to have the success in a limited amount of snaps?
Some of it is it's more third down, so it's more of a passing situation. He's a young, very young player in the league that's very athletic, and he is like Barkevious that's going to get better with time. He's going to get bigger, he's going to get stronger, and he's going to get smarter, and he's got the instincts, the field right now, but when he will be able to say, wow, I can set a guy up, I know what this guy does, what this guy is good at, I can counter that. But he's I keep talking about our young team, our young defense, and we're going to get better because these guys are going to get better. They're going to get more comfortable with our system, how we call things. I'll get more comfortable with what they do best. And that's really what our challenge is, how to move these young pieces around and understand what they do. And we think our team is starting to get comfortable with coaches with players and players with coaches.
In terms of your performance against Baltimore, in what ways was that maybe the most satisfying game of the year on defense for you?
I don't know that it was for me. It's satisfying in that it was the last victory, the last game. I don't even remember the score of the game now, but you know, I've moved on from that. But here's what it is for us. It allowed us to stay in the hunt, to have an opportunity to make this game this week a bigger game. And obviously the more we win, every time we win, the next game will be very, very big. And really the game behind us really just gives us an opportunity to have another meaningful game in November.
I guess in that question, I'm kind of fishing for names of guys who show.
Oh, well, that's easy. Yeah, that's easy. Yes, obviously up front. When you hold a competitor like Ray Rice to, I think, 0.7, 0.6 yards per carry, you're doing something well up front. And in the pass game, if you take away one blown coverage, I think the back end played well. And the biggest thing probably that we took out of the game was halftime. They scored 40 seconds before halftime, and we went in, and you know, everything was working. And you know, we always lately have been talking about what kind of halftime adjustments do you make. You know, again, every game but one, we've been ahead at halftime, so there's not a lot of adjustments to make at halftime. And we went in as a staff and just said, hey, guys, what we're doing is working. And really all I said at halftime, I looked at them, we talked about that play was one play in the game, but they all looked like they had long faces, you know. And I said, oh, no, it's not here we go. It's like get up and get ready and let's go out and keep doing what we're doing. And we talked about Kansas City maybe being a – epiphany of, oh, we can compete with the good teams. I think hopefully at halftime they learned that it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what the score is. Let's go out and play well. So hopefully the Baltimore game is like, it doesn't matter. We're just going to come out at halftime and just keep doing what we do.
When you looked at the Hail Mary pass, that regulation, fans are constantly amazed how that happens. You guys obviously preach knocking the ball down, but can you?
I don't.
There's some understanding as to how it does happen.
Yeah, I don't teach that at all. I teach catch the ball. I can show you Green Bay, Seattle last year. I can show you Cincinnati, Baltimore this year. I can show you Tennessee, Detroit last year of knocking the ball down, getting it caught for a touchdown. I don't teach that. I teach catch the ball.
Do some guys teach knock it down?
Not on our staff. They don't. No, they teach catch the ball. Well, yes. I think that's a proverbial thing is knock the ball down. Well, half the time you don't. I've seen knock the ball down into the ground and the guy catches it at his feet for a touchdown. So I don't teach it because statistically I can show you both ways don't work. Both ways do work. So I teach catch the ball.
Hard to catch it in a big group of people?
It is, but it's easy to catch it when you knock it down or knock it up. It's easier to catch it that way. And my point is you can't statistically show me that that's effective. Catch the ball. I mean, that's what you're supposed to do, catch the ball. They're trying to catch it. Catch it. What was their mistake? Knocking the ball up in the air.
So do you use that as a teaching point this week?
Oh, we used it when I got here. We showed film of those Hail Marys being caught, and that's why I try to not tell my players something, show my players something. I can tell my little kid, don't touch that stove, but they're like, why? And until they touch it, you know, they don't understand. And that's why I show film of big plays, why things go right or wrong, because I think it's critical that when you can show their peers doing it, it's more valid than just some coach sitting saying, knock the ball down.
Just a couple more questions. Bo influence in Marvin and obviously in you. Of course, it's Zimmer over there, week in Marvin stuff. Of course, you know whether you study what they do and kind of say, yeah, that's this and process. Do you look at Zimmer's stuff a lot, Marvin's stuff a lot?
Yeah, I don't think this is Marvin or LeBeau. I think it's Mike Zimmer. Totally different package. It's a pressure package, but he, you know, obviously they're 4-3, and they use more what we would most people call double barrel, guys up in the A gaps and they're dropping. It's a totally different pressure package and very effective, but totally different. And I'm not down there, obviously, but I think Marvin probably spends more time with the offense because this is definitely a different package. How much of him? I hope 100%, meaning I hope I always carry what he's done. And I always say it's off the field more than on the field. But on the field, next week's going to be an interesting matchup of same defense going against same defense.
Hey, Ray, you guys gave up 2 passing touchdowns in the first 5 games and 11 in the last 4.
That's not good.
So What is the reason for that? Such a disparity.
Non-sarcastically, I think at the end of the year you'd have to tell me where they came from. Meaning, we'd have to look and say, are they coming from the 1 yard line? Are they coming from the 40-yard line? Where are they coming from? Why are we better at stopping the run? Do teams pass the ball more than run the ball? Because when you look at, I guarantee you, probably most of the league, if not 90% of the league at the 1 yard line, they run some form of 3 wides. They don't run the traditional goal line offense, you know, 3 yards in a cloud of dust. Everybody's spreading you out. So that's a big factor. It's a passing league. It's probably easier to pass the ball over one guy's head than to run the ball through 11 guys.
You've been here all this time and you had a whole bye week, and there's not one interesting, quirky stat yet.
Here's one. My daughter got married, so that's my first wedding of a child. And it was an awesome weekend, so I just left football alone. There's a stat.
Joe Hayden having a Pro Bowl caliber season?
Yes, in the fact that sometimes when you don't have big interception numbers, it's because they don't throw the ball your way. And I don't know if it was Darrell Revis or not, but somebody said they didn't catch a ball on me. I had a heck of a game. They said, well, you know, you don't have any interceptions. He said, they didn't throw the ball my way. Joe has done a fantastic job of being pressured to cover the rarest of athletes in the NFL that can run and jump and catch and without hitting the guy past 5 yards. So he's having a fantastic year. I think Buster Screen is having a fantastic year. I think T.J. Ward is having a fantastic year, and I think I said last week not to single out one guy because they're playing well, but my biggest surprise and probably the MVP for me is Tashawn Gibson. He has done a remarkable job for us.
If I could follow up on that question, so are you telling me that in those first 5 games they weren't running those spread formations from the one?
No, I didn't say spread. At the 1 yard line, if you go look at probably 99% of the teams in the NFL at the 1 yard line, tell me how many of them use 3 tight ends versus 3 wide receivers. I think you'd be surprised to say, wow, they use 3 wide receivers. Detroit, Buffalo, you go on and on. That's just a trend in the league the last 4 years is nobody runs 3 tight ends anymore.
I'm saying, so in the first 5 games, though, if you didn't face those situations or what? I'm just trying to understand why that disparity is there. Or maybe they weren't those situations in those games.
That I don't know. Somebody would have to research that. But I don't know that answer. I just know what the trend in the league is. And is it because more teams are passing, they don't want to run on us? Maybe they figure, you know, they average 3.0 1 yard, a 3.4 yards at rush. They figure that's the best thing that they do. Maybe they don't want to pound it in there. But I would have to go back, or someone would have to go back and see where they and what formations they threw the ball from.
Right. I could understand you saying Gibson's the biggest surprise. Why the MVP?
Because he was a former corner that didn't play last year, or he played limited snaps last year. Going to a position that requires a ton of smarts, and he can never be wrong at the position. And he's a much better tackler than I ever envisioned. He's got fantastic hands, and he's tough, and he makes very few mistakes. And he's protected some guys that may have been out of position. And I use the word unremarkable, meaning you on a piece of paper when you're watching practice and grading, you don't remark anything about him because he's always in the right place doing the right thing. So I just it's a compliment to me to say he's unremarkable, because at the end of the day, when you look at your sheet, 39, it's either good or you don't say anything. Oh, you don't say, get over here, do this, you're wrong, because he has very few mental mistakes, and he's just been a fantastic player that it's really, for me, a comfort, because I know he's going to be in the right place at the right time and do his job well.
All right, thanks, everybody. Thanks,
is that defensive MVP or MVP of your secondary that you meant?
For me, defensively.
Yeah, defensively?
Mm-hmm.